Women Oral History Project 2. Today is October the 16th, 1987. Emily Andelman and Marion Mervant interviewing Mr. Maurice Goldstein. Could you state your name, please?
I didn't hear you.
Could you tell me your name, please?
My name is Maurice H. Goldstein.
Thank you. Mr. Goldstein, could you tell me your birthday?
March 25th, 1902, I was born.
Okay. Were you born in a hospital or at home?
I was born at home on the south side of Pittsburgh.
Do you remember your address?
1415 Carson Street.
You had told us last time that your mother, your mother came here, in, was it 1899 with the family?
No, my parents came here probably about 1890 or so.
Okay. Did they know each other before they came here?
No. He was from Lithuania and she was from Russia. They probably were 1,000 miles apart there.
And they both came directly to Pittsburgh?
My father lived for a short time, I think, in Ireland, in transit, working his way over from the old country here. Mm-hmm.
And your mother came with her family?
Mother came with her parents.
And you mentioned that her father was a founder of Shari Tefillah Synagogue.
That's
after
right.
He came. Was he a layman or a rabbi or?
No, he was a layman, that's all. He was engaged in the tobacco and confectionery business.
Do you know what date the synagogue was founded?
No, I don't.
Did they also live on the south side?
No, they lived up in what is known as the Hill District.
Okay.
We were the only members of the family group who didn't live up in the Hill District. I didn't know what the Hill District was until I was 16 or 17 years of age. I was very seldom over there, except to visit my grandparents occasionally.
You said that your parents ran a store on the south
side.
What was the name of the store?
It was under the name of I. Goldstein, and it was a clothing store.
Mm-hmm. What kind of clothes?
Menswear, exactly.
And did everybody in the family help out?
Everybody helped out, sure. The girls didn't help out much because it was a menswear store.
Mm-hmm.
But the boys did, yeah.
Was the clientele mostly Southside people?
Practically 99% Southside people, yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about Southside in those days? Your teenage and younger years, were there any other Jewish families around?
Well, there was probably 150 Jewish families that had their own congregation.
Hmm.
In those days, the merchants lived on the second floor above their stores.
Mm-hmm.
Before they had transportation, and the south side ran from about from the Smithville Street Bridge up to 30th Street where J&L's is, and there were stores scattered all over the area, and most of the stores were menswear store and ladies store, a few grocery men, and similar businesses. Almost without exception, the merchants lived in the south side.
And you said they had a synagogue. What was the name of the synagogue?
I don't recall.
Is that what your family belonged to?
That's right, yeah.
And was there a Hebrew school for the children?
For a short time they had one, but the people didn't patronize it enough, so they abandoned it. I went to Hebrew school there. They had a professor or teacher from Boston. His name was Harrison, and he was quite competent, but he was more of the new school, and the people as a whole sent their children over to the Hill District to the school there, so that the local school had to be abandoned. It was only there probably 4 or 5 years, that's all.
When you say that Mr. Harrison was of the new school, you mean he wasn't Orthodox?
He was Orthodox, but he taught, he didn't teach by rote memory. He taught like a man who was teaching in a school, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He was more modernized, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little about your elementary school? Your elementary school.
Well, I went to a school called Birmingham Public School, which was about one block from where I lived, and we had the teachers there, and I got a very, very good fundamental education in what I consider English. I consider my English teacher there far superior to those I had later in high school or in college.
My goodness, do you remember her name?
Yeah, her name was Miss Werner. Werner, V-E-R-N-E-R.
And what, were there other people who you went to grade school with who later became prominent in the area?
None as far as I can recall.
Did you have any problems in school with being Jewish?
Being Jewish?
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
Were there other Jewish kids in your classes?
I don't think there was any other Jewish boy or girl in the class. There might have been one, but I'm not sure. I don't recall.
At that period of time at home, first of all, how were you situated within the family? How many older and younger than you?
All the girls were older, and the boys, I was the oldest boy, and the girl.
So your mother had all the girls first and then all the boys.
That's right.
Yeah. Very systematic, though.
Well, I was born on March 25th, mm-hmm. and my bris was scheduled for April 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And when they sent out the calls there that the bris would be April 1st, a lot of people didn't show up because they thought it was April Fool. They thought it was another girl. Just kidding. So that's what my parents helped me.
Did your mom have help in the house?
Oh, yes, yeah. There's seven children and a mm-hmm. unit family of nine. We had to have help. We had Slavish help, local help that came in, and they turned over. They would work for 2 or 3 years and fill up a little dowry of $200 or $300 and get married. That's how they got married.
Did your mom keep kosher home?
Yes, absolutely.
Howard.
We had in order to get kosher meat, I generally walked over to Logan Street and she gave the order and I picked it up. So I went across the river to the, walked over both ways and got the required meat, that's all.
Mm-hmm. And how about Jewish holidays?
We observed them all, except only the main holidays. We observed Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah and holidays like Sukkot and Shavuos and so forth. They weren't observed. We kept the store open those days.
Mm-hmm.
Only the main holidays were we closed. We were always closed for the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Did the synagogue that you belong to on the south side have a lot of young people? Did they get involved in any groups together?
No, it was really a hit and miss proposition. Formed primarily to have a place to go on holiday. Now later, when they had their own building, I wasn't so close, and if they had any activities then, I wasn't aware of it because I was working at it, you see. I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would be during the war. We're talking now after 1918.
That would be sometime in the, you know, it'll be sometime in the 20s or so. Somebody
yes,
could
do it.
Okay. I know.
Okay. So when you went to college, you said that you were at home while you were in college?
Yes, I was at home and I went to school and I worked for the Tri-State News Service
mm-hmm.
probably four nights a week from 7 to 11. I think I worked a full Sunday shift and then I went to classes during the morning and in the afternoon I devoted most of my time to the Pitt Weekly.
And when did you move out of your home, your parents' home?
I moved when I got married in 1935.
And where did you move to?
Moved up to Mount Hall Road and I later moved to Murdoch Street and then later to Phillips Avenue and finally we're here, that's all.
Were any of those homes that you built yourself?
No, I've never owned a home. I've rented all my life for some reason or other.
Were they houses or apartments that you lived in?
The first one was a house, and the second was a duplex, and the other was a duplex, and this is the apartment, yeah.
What was your wife's name?
Edith H. Horvitz, H-O-R-V-I-T-Z.
And was she originally from Pittsburgh, too?
I was born in Pittsburgh, yeah.
You mentioned that when you were first married, that you belonged to Rhoda Shalom.
Yeah, we belonged there. She was one of the secretaries to Dr. Freehoff for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And her being a secretary there, we became members of Rhoda Shalom. And later, I joined Poland Zedek. I was very friendly to Rabbi Shapiro, who was an Orthodox rabbi. And just,
about when was it that you switched to Poland Zedek?
About 1954, 56, something like that.
19. When was your daughter born? Remember?
1942.
Is your wife still around?
Yeah, she's in the other room resting.
I didn't meet her before.
Well, she hadn't been feeling too well.
Did your wife stay home and take care of your daughter while you were?
Oh, sure. Sure.
She
worked for a short time after we were married, but after my daughter was born, she no longer worked. She confined herself strictly to being a mother and a housewife.
Within your own home, did your wife keep kosher home?
Yes. Still do.
Mm-hmm. Was that unusual in those days for belonging to a Reform synagogue, or was that considered... People
I don't know. I guess it was a hybrid situation. I don't know. Do the people who Reform Jews don't they observe kosher?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, I think you can be a Reform Jew and still observe kosher.
I imagine so.
Although I'm pretty certain there's a large percentage of them who don't buy Orthodox meat all the time. So, but we did.
And. Did you observe, basically have the same kind of religious upbringing for your daughter that you had for yourself?
Well, she attended the Rhoda Shalom Temple,
mm-hmm.
and graduated from there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told you before, after she graduated, she later decided to follow Orthodoxy instead of the Reformed Jewry. She made her decision
mm-hmm.
after she started the college, MIT.
That was somewhat unusual for her to go to MIT, considering her age.
I would think so. Maybe 3% of the students there are female. 97% are male at that time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel about her going off to MIT?
Well, very good. I thought it was quite an honor.
What high school did she go to?
Taylor Allardyce.
It's unusual to have a daughter who's an electrical engineer. Certainly, she must have gone to school in the 60s.
Yeah, she's an electrical engineer, and her husband is a mechanical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
She's now working for a Data General Corporation as a senior software engineer. She sets up programs. She does things that I don't know a thing about. Mechanically, I'm weak.
Where do you think she got her interest in electrical engineering from? In engineering?
Well, going to MIT was the primary engineering school, so she selected electrical engineering.
What made her interested in going to MIT, even? Do you remember?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I think one of the contributing factors was that her boy she married was going to MIT. I think that helped out a little bit.
Oh, so she got married before she went?
No. She knew him from high school, and he went to MIT, and she decided to go to MIT also.
Oh, so he's originally from Pittsburgh also?
No, I think they're from Milwaukee, and his father is born in Baltimore, still living, and retired scientist from Westinghouse, Mr. David Fax, F-A-X.
Okay. Get back on to your careers. You really had several careers.
Well, as I told you, I was in... I've been a newspaper man, I've been a lawyer, I've been a politician, I've been active in organizations. Reach over there and get that a picture there.
Okay.
I don't think I told you about it. One of the functions, the top one, that's right. One of the functions of the Tri-State News Service was to collect election returns. And until about 1962, I helped to supervise election returns. And some people used to say I won the election because I supervised the returns. You wanted a picture of me, I can't have it. Here's a picture of me if you want to use it and return it, showing me checking up on the girl using the ATM machine and compiling election returns for the Allegheny County. So that's probably taken about 1960 or 62, I'm not sure. Yeah. Or maybe.
Okay. When you first started working as a reporter while you were in school, you said that you covered sports.
Well, later. Originally, I was what you call a leg man. Mm-hmm. I covered the I worked as a police reporter. I was assigned a certain police station, and one man would be assigned to downtown, another to Squirrel Hill, another was to Frankstown Avenue, and so forth. I was a swing man. My man had a day off. I went to the downtown police station. If another man went up on north side, I covered north side. And later, my boss, Mr. Smiley, called me in and part sometime. I was a rewrite man. The people would call in and give the news and so forth, and I would rewrite it. And being 17 years of age at that time, I had a great deal of difficulty in adjusting myself to that. But finally, I became a fairly competent rewrite man. And then as the years went on, I was assigned to cover sports like football games at Grove City and other places. We covered those games for the local newspapers.
Mm-hmm. So which football teams were there around? There was college teams?
Oh, yeah. There was the Pitt, Duquesne. No, Duquesne didn't. Duquesne was there. Carnegie Tech, WJ, Grove City, and Geneva, and all the surrounding colleges.
Mm-hmm. And
I also covered golf, but and I also covered the hockey. I was one of the first hockey reporters back in the 30s or something, maybe in the 20s, I forget which.
This is college hockey?
What's that?
College hockey?
No, professional hockey.
Professional hockey.
Yeah.
Was there a professional team here?
Yeah, we had a good professional team here called the Pittsburgh Hornets, I think, and they played in the old Duquesne Garden, where Park Plaza now is, and they had their place there. It was very high class and very competent hockey.
Mm-hmm. When did the team go out of business?
Well, as far as for me to recall, I guess went out of business probably in the 40s, and then there was a vacuum, and there was no hockey team here for a long time until they built the arena.
Mm-hmm.
See, the Park Plaza took over the location of the old Duquesne Garden, which was the arena location.
Okay. And you said you covered baseball.
Yeah, I'm not. I covered baseball as an aide. We gave the box scores for the Associated Press, mm-hmm. and they would send them to every paper in the United States. See. We didn't cover the baseball for the local papers at all, only for out of town.
And those were the days of Forbes Field.
That was Forbes Field entirely. Yeah, that was the days of Pye Trainer and the Wainer Boys. You don't remember them, probably, because they were that before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
Are you 30 yet?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about Forbes Field.
Well, Forbes Field was a natural baseball field. It was one of the finest fields in the country from an observation standpoint. If you were sitting in Forbes Field, you could look out and see entire Shenley Park. It was beautiful, and it was built for a baseball field. It was far superior to at Three Rivers is a baseball field. It's one of the finest baseball fields in the country. It was built by a Jewish fellow. Barney Dreyfus was the owner of the ball club for many, many years, until his estate sold out in the 40s to some other owner, including Bing Crosby, and he was a 5% owner, and other people.
That's interesting. Was baseball different in the 20s and the 30s, would you say?
In what respect, you mean?
I don't know.
There was no TV and radio in those days, and the baseball was played in the daytime. Mm-hmm. And the crowds were probably 5,000, 6,000, or 7,000. Only on Saturday did they get a bigger crowd. And we had the blue laws in Pennsylvania, so you couldn't have baseball on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So there was a vacuum on Sunday, and instead of having professional baseball on Sunday, had a lot of semi-pro teams playing illegally, and nobody complaining on Sundays.
Were the players really professional? They do baseball full-time?
Oh, sure. The players then, in my opinion, were far superior to the players today. And we all the old people feel that way. I feel that we have what you call a hypo baseball. The baseball they played with in those days was a ball that just took a long. You couldn't knock it out of the ballpark very well. The baseball today, in my opinion, has been hypoed, so that then anybody can knock the ball out of the baseball park. That's all.
In what way did it change? Did the ball change?
Sure, they made it more lively. Mm-hmm. You could drop a baseball almost go up to the second floor. In the old days, you dropped a baseball, it went up maybe 15, 20 feet. They say that the baseball is the same. I say it isn't, that's all.
And who were the sports? Were there sports announcers at all?
No. There being no radio or TV, there was no sports announcer. So relied on the men who were the writers. I knew them very well. Chet Smith from the Pittsburgh Press, and a good friend of mine, Chili Doyle from the Sun Telegraph, Havy Boyle from the old Chronicle Telegraph, these people all. They were fixtures, and they were around for many, many years.
By the way, you had mentioned that there were 7 newspapers in Pittsburgh. What, do you remember their names?
Yeah, in the afternoon, Pittsburgh Press, the Pittsburgh Leader, the Pittsburgh Sun, and the Pittsburgh Chronicle Telegraph. Mm-hmm. In the morning was Pittsburgh Post, Pittsburgh Gazette Times, and the Pittsburgh Dispatch.
And of those papers, which one was generally considered the best paper?
In the afternoon, the Press was considered the best. In the morning, I wouldn't know which would be considered the best. Probably the Gazette Times. The Pittsburgh Dispatch, which was located up in Upper Fifth Avenue, had some outstanding writers, but it couldn't make a grade because it didn't get enough advertising, that's all. It was the day of mergers, too.
When did they merge down?
Gradually, over the years. The Leader sold out, and then the Sun Telegraph combined with the Sun and the Chronicle Telegraph got together, and then that left 2 left. Then later, the Chronicle Telegraph dropped out and left only the Pittsburgh Press. The Pittsburgh Post and Gazette Times merged after the Dispatch quit. That left only one paper, the Pittsburgh Post Gazette, which is a combination of the old Post and the Gazette Times.
Were the newspapers mostly local in?
They were all locally controlled. Yeah. Colonel Kinnan was the owner of the Pittsburgh Press. The Oliver family, Steele family, the owner of the Chronicle Telegraph. Arthur Braun, who was a founder of Union Trust Company, was the owner of the Post. And A.P. Moore, who later married, I think, Leon Russell, he was the owner of the Leader. And the Dispatch was owned by some local, all local family, all locally owned. Mm-hmm. And later, the Hearst people came in and took over the Chronicle Telegraph, and Scripps Hard came in and took over the Pittsburgh Press.
Were there very many other Jewish reporters?
A few, but not too many. Not too many.
Do you feel there was any discrimination?
No, I don't think so. No, no. After all, they were just coming up those days. Most of the younger men were the byproducts of immigrants who would come in, and mm-hmm. and they weren't able to be newspaper reporters until about the 20s. There were others. There was a fellow named Julius Levine, who was with the Telegraph, and there was Lester Biederman, who was the baseball editor for the Pittsburgh Press, and there was another man named Levine, who later went to Philadelphia, and we had two or three Jewish employees beside myself at Tri-State who worked there for a couple of years and quit, you see.
What was the influence of the newspapers on the events of the time in Pittsburgh? Did the editorial staff have...
Well, the papers were... They were political in character, and they were controlled by business at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were conservative in viewpoint. Everybody else was conservative then, too. They're ultra-activists today. Don't you agree with me?
Well, things have certainly changed.
They certainly have.
Tell me about Pitt. You were there from 1919 to 1922, you said?
I was in the undergraduate school from 1919 to 1922. I graduated in 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I got credit for a half year for my outside work as a newspaper man. I was in the School of Journalism, so that enabled me to graduate in 3.5 years. And then I went to law school downtown.
At Pitt?
At Pitt, from 22 to 25, during which time, most of the time, I was a reporter in the courthouse.
When you were an undergraduate, had the Cathedral of Learning been built yet?
No, the Cathedral of Learning was begun probably in the last year of my undergraduate days. Chancellor Bowman was the godfather of the Cathedral of Learning. It was, the land was given by Andy Mellon, you know. He gave all that area where the Cathedral of Learning is bounded by Fifth Avenue, Bigelow Boulevard, Belleville Avenue, and Forbes Street. That's Mellon Acres. That was a gift of Andrew W. Mellon.
Did he give it specifically for the cathedral?
I think he gave it, that I don't know, but he and Bowman were close, and I guess Bowman told him he had this idea. He gave the land to Pitt, probably with no restrictions.
Where were the school buildings while you were there?
Well, they were located above the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall on the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
And we were overcrowded. We had barracks there, wooden buildings we had to go to. You froze in the winter and you suffocated in the summer there. And so.
You had mentioned a lot of organizations that you belonged to while you were at school.
Yeah.
What type of organizations were they?
Well, Omicron Delta Kappa, that's ODK, mm-hmm. that's an honorary society given to people who used to select 6 or 7 men a year
mm-hmm.
at that time. On account of their activities at school, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chosen in my senior year as a member of Beta Gamma Sigma, which is a professional economic society. And theoretically, you're selected because of your scholarship attainments. Then Sigma Delta Chi is a professional journalistic society, and I naturally joined that. Then I was a member of a social fraternity, Pi Lambda Phi.
Was that a Jewish
thing? Yeah, that was Jewish entirely at that time. At that time, there was no intermingling of religions and races. Some fraternities were all Catholics, others were Protestants, and two or three were Jewish.
About what percentage of the undergraduate students do you think were Jewish at the time? It'd
be hard for me to judge, but strictly a guess, I'd say maybe 10 or 15%. I'm just guessing, strictly a guess.
Were there any dormitories?
No. He either lived in a boarding house or he lived in a fraternity house.
You said the law school at the time you went was downtown.
It was located in the Chamber of Commerce building. Mm-hmm. We had about half were full-time professors. Other were judges and the lawyers who came over to teach us.
And how many people were there in the class?
Maybe about 65, 70.
Again, were there quite a number of Jewish students?
Yeah. Proportion there, I'd say, pretty close to 25%.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the other people who went to law school with you?
Well, a man named Judge Adams was... He and I were considered the top students, and that's how I happened to be named assistant district attorney. Mm-hmm. When he became a district attorney, he appointed me one of his assistants. That's all.
Now, you mentioned after you got out of law school, you were a journalist first for a few years.
Yeah, for about 2 or 3 years.
Okay, well, you covered the...
I covered the courthouse during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I also worked on special assignments, too. That's all.
And then you went into private practice.
Yeah.
About how many years, until when were you in private practice?
From about 27 to the present day, probably about 60 years. That's all.
What kind of cases did you generally
treat? General practice. I tried everything.
Hmm.
Criminal cases, landlord and tenant cases, squire cases,